said, that's at 4 o'clock on BBC Radio 3. But now, at 7 o'clock, it's time to go live to the Royal Albert Hall for this evening's prom. It's presented by Andrew McGregor.
This evening's conductor, Sir Colin Davis, has had a long relationship with Beethoven's Missa Solemnis, first conducting it at the proms 40 years ago. He says it's so difficult for the orchestra to play and the chorus to sing that performing it is like failing to reach the top of Mount Everest, adding that it's one of the great statements of any time. And sometimes he thinks that nobody likes it very much except him. Well, judging by the turnout for this last Proms Choral Sunday at the Royal Albert Hall, I think I can safely say that Sir Colin's wrong on that last point. But as a statement of faith, Beethoven's Solemn Mass can be troubling. Its cries for peace are undermined by the sounds of war, military fanfares, drums and marching rhythms, as though Beethoven, after all he's lived through in his own life and in war-torn Vienna, despairs of mankind's inability to make peace with itself. A sense of sadness that certainly isn't resolved by Beethoven's almost brusque, surprisingly quiet ending. After the grandeur, soul-searching and sometimes sublime soundscapes of so much of the Mass, an affirmative ending just wouldn't ring true for him. Now, there are some 360 performers on stage this evening, the London Symphony Orchestra, plus the Royal Albert Hall Organ, and the combined voices of the London Symphony Chorus and London Philharmonic Choir. But after living with this work for so long, can Sir Colin Davis put his finger on why Beethoven's Missa Solemnis is such a great work?
Why? Because the music's so good. The text had been around a long time. As some lady put it, we all know the lyrics. And at the same time, he's writing the Ninth Symphony, which, great though it is, doesn't really compare. He didn't go to church or do the things he should have done. But he had his own private relationship with what he called God or the higher powers. And that was very intense, his belief in that. But he does provoke thought after the Benedictus, that endless, wonderful lullaby. Jesus has ascended to heaven once more, and we're left dragging our sins through the mire for the annual day. And then Dona Nobis Patrum breaks down into manic preparations for war and so on, and then they come back and they can't really remember what it was they were asking in the first place. Oh yes, Patrum. Beethoven just shuts the doors in their faces, implying that the human race is completely given over to its weaknesses.
Sir Colin Davis. And by the way, don't forget that you can see texts of the Mass as set by Beethoven and programme notes on the BBC Proms website. And you can see it for yourself live on BBC 4 television. Well, the London Symphony Orchestra's leader, Gordon Nikolic, has already come on. Here are our four soloists. Soprano Helena Juntinen, mezzo Sarah Connolly, tenor Paul Groves and bass Matthew Rose, and the London Symphony Orchestra's president, conductor Sir Colin Davis, for this evening's Proms performance of Beethoven's Missa Solemnis.
Thank you. Thank you.
Beethoven's Missa Solemnis, the solemn mass setting which he inscribed on the first page of the score, from the heart, may it return to the heart. And with that final Agnus Dei, with its repeated pleas of Dona Nobis Pacem, give us peace, a peace that, according to this evening's conductor, Sir Colin Davis, eludes us at the end of the word. The light of the world has gone out, he says, and we're left toiling away in the mud of our sins, which may be a bleak conclusion, but what a profoundly moving piece of soul-searching it is. Sir Colin leaving the stage with our quartet of soloists, Helena Juntunen, standing in for an indisposed Carmen Giannotasio, mezzo Sarah Connolly, tenor Paul Groves, and bass Matthew Rose. As Sir Colin was conducting the orchestra, he's known for pretty much half a century, the London Symphony Orchestra, and the combined forces of the London Symphony Chorus and London Philharmonic Choir. And just about the first thing Sir Colin Davis did as the applause began was to get the LSO's leader, Gordon Nikolic, to his feet. He was standing for Beethoven's beautiful violin solo in the Benedictus, effectively becoming a fifth soloist in the line at the front of the stage for what Sir Colin calls an endless, wonderful lullaby. Here come our soloists again, to the applause, not just of the promenaders, but the members of the London Symphony Orchestra and both choruses behind us, ranged in front of and on either side of the Royal Albert Hall's magnificent organ, played, by the way, by Catherine Edwards, one of the very few organ parts written by Beethoven. And onto the stage come our two chorus masters, the London Philharmonic Choir's chorus master Neville Creed and the London Symphony Chorus's director Joseph Cullen, who tells me that this is actually the last work he's been preparing with, and he's stepping down after a decade in the post to do more work in Europe and focus more on ecclesiastical music making, although he is staying on as chorus master at the Huddersfield Choral Society. Sir Colin bowing low. And the forces we just heard in the Royal Albert Hall are taking the Missa Solemnis on tour on the 16th. They're at the Beethoven Halle in the composer's hometown, Bonn, then Paris in October, New York's Avery Fisher Hall. Well, Sir Colin Davis has lived with Beethoven's Missa Solemnis for a large part of his musical life. He said before that to him it feels as though Beethoven is wrestling with God, saying that if there isn't a God, then he's going to create him. And when he sets the words of the creed, "I believe in one God," you'd better believe him when he says it. And for Sir Colin, Beethoven makes it possible to believe for the duration of the work, this precious 90 minutes of music, even if afterwards he says he can't believe anything. That's what makes it so poignant for him. So as Sir Colin approaches his 84th birthday in 3 weeks' time, how has his view of the work changed since he first brought it to the proms as a much younger man 40 years ago?
I have no idea. It's just that I think the older you get, the more you approach these pieces much more simply, because you're not under pressure from the seven deadly sins in the same way as you once were. And that frees you up wonderfully.
And that was Sir Colin Davis, ending our prom tonight, which was presented live at the Royal Albert Hall by Andrew McGregor. Well, we're back at the Royal Albert Hall in the final week of the BBC Proms tomorrow night. And join us too at Cadogan Hall tomorrow lunchtime for the final BBC Proms chamber music recital. The violinist Christian Tetzlaff and the pianist Lars Vogt team up for a grand finale to the season of recitals. Music by Mozart and Bartok tomorrow lunchtime. Violin sonatas by both composers live here on Radio 3 at 1 o'clock tomorrow lunchtime. Well, now, our drama on three tonight is set in the lead-up to the First World War, based on a true-life story, in fact. An American diplomat posted to a remote region of the Ottoman Empire is forced to play a game of poker with the Turkish regime, and the stakes are high as the Great War looms. Louis Naure's The Light of Darkness is our drama on three at 8:45 this evening. And to take us there, music for piano and cello by a 20-year-old Mendelssohn. This is a set of variations from 1829, some of which bear the influence of our composer tonight, Beethoven. The Variations Concertantes by Mendelssohn, played there by Richard Lester and Susan Tomes. This is BBC Radio 3. We're broadcasting between 90 and 93 FM on digital radio and also in high-definition sound online. It's just after a quarter to nine. Next tonight, drama on three. Light of Darkness by Louis Naura. Louis Naura is one of Australia's leading writers, and his work includes libretti, novels and stage plays, as well as a number of Prietalia-winning radio dramas. He's written about historical Russia, Paraguay and Indonesia, and now, in this new play for Radio 3, he turns to the Ottoman Empire, specifically a rural province of Turkey in 1915. He creates a story of an embattled diplomat forced to play a cat-and-mouse game with local dignitaries during an era of Turkish history which remains deeply contested. Naura was drawn to this period after hearing a piece of music by the Armenian composer Komitas, who was arrested in 1915, and some of Komitas's music is used in the play. Well, that led him to the discovery of the writings of an American consul in the region, Leslie A. Davis, which inspired tonight's drama.
The Light of Darkness by Louis Naura.
Them. Wagons and horses.
Give me a look.
You might have to change the focus.
What's wrong with your eyes? It's completely out of focus. There. Coming down the main street. It must be them. What does the consul look like?
I don't know. Let me look.
No. Maybe he's the one with the cowboy hat.
What's a cowboy hat?
Like Buffalo Bill.
Give me a turn. No, he must be the consul's guard. That other fellow sitting on the front of the wagon, he looks important.
Where's his wife?
There's an American flag painted on the side. It is them. Get all the staff to the front door. Now!
Come on, hurry up!
A straight line, the consul is coming, the consul is coming. Everyone in a line. A straight line. Oh, open it! Open the door! Oh, goodness!
Who's in charge here?
Mr. Petrosian.
You?
Yes, sir. Do you want me to help the consul?
I am the consul. Who are you?
Garabit Petrosian, Mr. Consul. I'm your messenger, Kavas, and now Dragoman.
Kavas, Dragoman. Wonderful titles. Translation, you're my interpreter in aid.
Yes, sir.
And who are you?
Miss Shushan Krikorian, Mr. Consul.
Miss?
Yes, I am your secretary and typist and can interpret Armenian and Turkish.
Excellent. Now do we have a cook?
Yes, sir. Mrs. Balakian here.
Mr. Consul!
Madam, I want food as soon as possible for everyone out there. I want real meat. No goat meat, and I want it fresh.
She doesn't speak English.
Well, you make sure she does it. I want a hot bath now. I've been eating dust for weeks. Damn lice in my hair. And my rear has never been so sore.
Will I get someone to help your wife, sir?
She's back in the States. I want my horse fed and washed down. Now, where's my bedroom? And have someone look after the others.
This way to your sleeping quarters, sir.
Yes? Guest bed.
Garab bed.
Want my glass of whiskey?
You ordered one, sir.
Oh, I'm dying of thirst. Hand it over. Haven't you seen a man having a bath before?
Yes, sir, but not a consul.
Last few weeks, I slept on the roofs of inns, unable to get to sleep because it was so cold. And all I could do was dream of whiskey warming up my insides.
You slept on the roofs?
Mm-hmm. The others slept in the wagons. Turkish inns, I have discovered, are filthy and full of lice. And it got worse the further we came. No wonder typhus is rampant. Will you look at the water? It's as muddy as the Mississippi. Imagine the dirt and dust that's still in my pores. That nice lambent warmth spreading through my skin. Before dinner, I want to see the papers that the previous consul was supposed to give me.
You didn't get them. They were sent to your previous posting 3 weeks ago.
Well, it's taken me 3 weeks to get here from the Black Sea.
There is no rail service or good roads here, sirs.
As I've discovered.
And sometimes the mail takes an inordinate amount of time to travel distances.
What about commercial opportunities here?
Commercial opportunities?
Give me a straight answer.
Harpot has a warehouse full of Singer sewing machines. They sell well.
Sewing machines are always needed. What else? Manufacturing?
There's a few small silk farms.
That's it?
This is a very remote district, Mr. Consul, and with no real transport system. Everything we grow or make is just for the people who live here.
So the idea of me developing commercial interests for the United States is a chimera?
A chimera?
An illusion, a daydream.
Yes, both words would be applicable to your situation, Consul.
That is a wonderful introduction to Harput. My dragoman, my kavas, my interpreter. You don't look Turkish, Garabit.
Armenian, sir. We're Christian. We're not Turks and not Muslims.
And you all get along with brotherly love?
You're not religious, sir.
My stomach's rumbling, or else something else is happening down in the boondocks. A towel there, thanks. Oh, I'm famished.
Do you want me to...
Yeah, always answer knocking at your door.
Yes? Thank you.
When is it?
Your clean boots and a note saying that Mr. Rashid, the local chief of police, and Mr. Sabit, the valley, have noticed your arrival and would like the honor of meeting the new American consul, Baharpot.
By valley, you mean the local governor?
Yes.
What's he like?
He seems to enjoy life very much.
The chief of police?
Oh, he believes in everything he does.
Oh, dear.
Good morning, Consul Davis.
Good morning, Governor. This is my aide and interpreter, Garabit Petrosian.
We know you're Armenian dragoman. This is Rashid Bey, chief of police.
Oh, good morning, Mr. Bey.
No, Consul. Bey means mister.
Günaydın, Consulus Bey.
Doesn't understand a word of English. Don't let the baby face fool you, Consul. Our chief of police may look 14, but he makes up for it in his actions, as his aide will attest when he didn't press the chief's uniform properly. Sit down, sit down. I'll order some coffee and sweets. Your Armenian can sit over there. Cafe, Heman. What brings you to this remote spot, Consul?
The State Department sent me here.
Where were you previously?
Batum, on the Black Sea. It was my first posting.
I've heard you didn't bring a wife.
She couldn't put up with the tropical climate at Batum, the heat and the rain. So she returned to the United States to recover her health.
Perhaps just as well. I have two wives. Sometimes they argue so much. My problem is that I've only got two bedrooms, so there's always a quarrel around bedtime. The only thing they understand is a spank. They calm down after that. Do you spank your wife, Mr. Consul?
Not lately.
Hiç Bağdat'a bulundunuz mu, Consulus Bey?
Have you been to Baghdad, Mr. Consul?
No.
Yes?
No.
The chief of police understands only one word of English, yes.
Yes.
But refuses to recognize the word no for some reason.
Tırram, tırram. Bağdat'ta otomobilim vardı.
We had an automobile in Baghdad.
There are rumors of what our chief of police here learned as a teenager in Baghdad, and they're not nice. He was brought up here, but the locals know he can't be bribed. I taught him poker. He proved a natural, but he doesn't even cheat. An incorruptible policeman in the Ottoman Empire is almost unheard of, Mr. Consul. Once we almost ruled the whole world, and now look at us. Do you know much about this province, Consul?
My transfer came so quickly, I hardly had time to do any research.
We are 500,000 people, and that includes about 150,000 Christians.
You mean Armenians? I know next to nothing about them.
There's something that we Turks have had to put up with for some time. Is that not right, dragoman?
I have no opinion. I am just a consul's dragoman and interpreter.
So you don't speak Turkish or Armenian, Mr. Consul?
No. French, Spanish, Russian, German.
All useless here, I'm afraid, Mr. Consul.
Your English is good.
My father had an English tutor for me. He thought I would be a diplomat like you. I could have been one, only I lost my temper with the American ambassador in Constantinople. You Americans can be swine, Consul. You think you own the world when you're really products of a simple and frontier civilization. Our history goes back thousands of years. Dr. Atkinson, the doctor at the Red Cross Hospital here, he's a nice American. He doesn't think he runs the world. Dr. Atkinson and I talk about the world as equals.
I'm sorry that we Americans have lacked humility in your presence.
When I saw you ride into Harput, Mr. Consul, riding that horse, wearing those boots and hat, you reminded me of the hero from Last of the Mohicans. What's his name?
Natty Bumpo.
A nice but uncivilized warrior. Have you killed any Red Indians, Consul?
I grew up on Long Island. There were no Indians left.
They're all gone?
Hmm. Yes.
Perhaps all to the good of your nation.
Hiç tayare ye bindiniz mi?
Have you been in an aeroplane, Consul?
No.
Yes?
Yok.
Eşitiz o zaman.
Then we're equal.
The chief of police believes that there will be a war soon.
Ben bir tayarenin bomba atışını gördüm. Gelecek işte böyle olacak.
The chief of police saw an aeroplane drop bombs. He says it is the future.
That's because he's half my age, Consul. He thinks that everything new is going to change the future.
And on what side will the Turks fight, Governor?
Why, the French and English sides, of course. I have a feeling, Consul Davis, that we're going to be firm friends. N'est-ce pas?
Oui. So, the prognosis is not good. This province has no commerce of any importance at all. This has to be one of the most dismal backblocks in the world. Don't type that. What do you people do for fun around here? Bite the heads off rats?
The consulate doesn't have any rats as far as I know of. There are some nice places around Harput, sir.
Like what?
Lake Gülcük. Dr. Atkinson and the previous consul used to picnic there often.
Mm. How long will this letter take to get to Constantinople?
Perhaps 3 weeks.
Mm. Entree!
The mail, sir.
Thank you. Any from the embassy in Constantinople?
This one, sir.
Oh.
Is that all the mail to be taken to the post office?
Yes. Is anything the matter, Mr. Davis?
My father is dying.
A very attractive lake. You are right, Shushan.
Do you want the blanket here?
Dr. Atkinson, Shushan told me you know this lake well.
Lake Gülcük is the closest place I know to a place of beauty and solitude. It's the only spot where I can relax. Hospital's always full, and being a doctor takes up all my time. When I come out here, I can sense God in the waters. The bulrushes in the mountains.
Well, there's plenty of bread and cheese, but where's the wine?
Ganovit's bringing it, sir.
When do you set off?
Tomorrow. I feel like I only just got here. Now I have that bone-breaking ride to Constantinople and then the ship back to the States.
It's terminal?
The embassy didn't say, except that he had cancer. Which, as a doctor, you know my father doesn't stand much chance. I must see him before he dies. Oh, it is calming, isn't it? Lake reminds me of Port Jefferson, where I grew up. I used to wait in the morning to see the fishing boats come in after being out all night. My father's boat was the pick of the bunch. Who's that riding over here?
That's Garabit.
I'm gonna have to teach him to ride properly. That one's out of control. He'd better not break the wine bottles.
The previous consul was Catholic. And what religious persuasion are you, Mr. Davis?
Hmm?
Mr. Davis! Mr. Davis!
What's he shouting about?
He seems upset.
Mr. Davis! Consul Davis!
Well, maybe he's found some nice French wines.
Mr. Davis! Consul!
What is it? Have you found a nice Burgundy?
War is declared.
War? Between whom?
The Turks have declared war on the English and French.
You mean they're on Germany's side?
Yes, sir.
What about America?
You're neutral, sir.
What's the town crier saying?
All men between the ages of 25 and 45 are to enroll in the army within 24 hours or else they'll be drawn and quartered.
Good Lord, if that's what they do to their own men, imagine what they'll do to the enemy. Yeah, we'll take a shortcut to the governor's.
Over there, sir. He's crossing the square.
Ah, yeah.
Governor!
What is it you want to see me about so urgently, Mr. Davis?
I come here in an official capacity.
What is this, official capacity?
The American government is not at war with Turkey. And as I am its consul here in Harput, I'd like confirmation that our American missionaries will not be harmed. Did I say something amusing, Governor?
You have no official capacity, Mr. Consul.
Governor, I am the consul.
With our declaration of war, we have redefined our relationship with the rest of the world. We do not recognize any foreign representatives in an official capacity.
We are not at war with you.
Mr. Davis, we Turkish people are proud people, and we've decided we will not stand for any more bullying from foreign nations. I can run you out of town whenever I like, or take over the consulate at the snap of my fingers. It is something I wouldn't mind. I need a larger house for my wives. What do you think of that?
The international diplomatic community would regard it as a hostile act.
What the world is not used to is that we Ottomans can now decide our own fate.
Well, where does that leave me?
Think of yourself as a visitor at my mercy. No, no, not mercy. My good humor. At the mercy of my good humor. And you?
Me?
You are an Ottoman citizen and aged between 25 and 45. Have you signed up yet?
He's my aide. He belongs to the consulate.
I don't think you heard me. He belongs to our country, not to a visitor such as yourself. What do you think of my nephew, the drummer boy?
He seems good for his age.
He is, but no one else will play music with him because he farts all the time.
You told me the Turks hate the Germans.
We do, but as Allah constantly reminds us humans, we must submit to what life throws at us. The war ministry was split between the Ottomans joining the Allies or Germany, and Germany won by a single vote. So our whole fate has been determined by one man. In doing so, he has given us the freedom to run our own country free from interference. Must go. Here comes my nephew, and even in an open space, he's a walking stink bomb. Good day, Mr. Davis.
So, Mr. Ambassador, because of this province's remoteness, I have no idea if the governor's willful actions are those of his alone, or are the Turkish government's contempt for international law. Would you please inform me as soon as possible as to the present state of affairs? I suspect that if I return to the United States, the governor may take the opportunity to close down or take over the consulate for the Turkish government. Please keep me informed as to my father's health, as I am very concerned about him. Signed, respectfully yours, Leslie A. Davis, Consul Harput. And address it as usual to the Honorable Henry Morgenthau, American Ambassador, Constantinople.
What about your wife, Mr. Davis? Shouldn't you let her know you won't be going back to America?
I'll write her this evening. What do you know about this governor, Shushan?
I've only lived in Harput for 6 months, Mr. Davis, when I came here to work from Erzurum, northeast of here.
You worked in a consulate there?
No, sir. I was training with the American College to become a teacher. My uncle and auntie are teachers in Massachusetts. I was hoping to follow them there after perfecting my English.
You must be 20...
21.
Well, you got plenty of time.
If we survive this war.
They can't harm you. You have diplomatic immunity because you work here.
Garabit said that the governor doesn't recognize diplomat immunity.
He will. All we have to do is be diplomatic. How are the replies to the invitations, Garabit?
Nearly everyone has accepted. They all want to know what's going to happen.
Me too.
I haven't been back to the States in 10 years now. I'm not needed back there, but I am here, Mrs. Riggs.
I hear you're going to teach at Cornell, Professor Nassessian. I studied there myself.
The present attitude of the Turks towards us Armenians means I would never get a university position in Constantinople. I'll not be sorry to miss Harput summers. They're hideous.
What'll you be teaching, Professor?
Philosophy. English idealists like Bishop Berkeley.
Didn't he say that nothing is real? And Dr. Johnson countered him by kicking a stone.
Dr. Johnson may have been an excellent writer, but I would have failed him in philosophy.
Dr. Atkinson, what do you think of this young chief of police?
What I think, Mr. Davis, I said, someone who loathes people suffers himself from self-loathing. So he's a very dangerous and disturbed young man. Trianne here had to treat him recently.
He has a bad constipation problem, which only makes his temper worse.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for coming tonight. I hope you like the food. Mrs. Balakian and I have daily battles about what she's going to cook, but I think we found a good medium tonight. You're all obviously worried about the situation here. The first thing to note is that America is not at war with Turkey, so we are neutral and hope to be treated as such. So far, the war hasn't come to the eastern provinces. The English and French missionaries have gone
home. And the Turks have commandeered their buildings for troops.
It's thought that the soldiers will come through here on their way to protect their eastern border with Russia. The governor can occasionally see reason when he's allowed Dr. Atkinson to keep running his hospital.
Because, quite simply, there's no other hospital of its standards in the region, so the governor has commandeered it. Let me say to you all here tonight, the Turkish troops are badly nourished, poorly clothed, and paid little. There's a typhus epidemic at the front. It's only a matter of time before it gets here. So, everyone sprinkle naphthalene around your offices and wear naphthalene bands around necks, arms, and legs in order to prevent lice from crawling onto your body.
What about the Armenians, Mr. Davis?
What about them?
There are rumors that the day before the Allies landed at Gallipoli on April 24th, over 200 important Armenian intellectuals and artists were arrested in Constantinople. It's thought that most were murdered.
Why?
Because they're Armenian. If it's as bad as what happened in the early 90s, then they're in trouble.
I don't know much about this history.
There are 2 million Armenians living in the empire. There's always rumors that the Armenians are a fifth column in the country.
We just have to trust the fact that we are neutral, and that the governor will respect that. In all likelihood, the Turks will lose this war. They're unprepared. Even the Germans regard them as a joke. But anyone who wants to leave can be assured I will supply them with guards for the journey. I take it, then, that you're all staying.
Yes. We are here to save lives.
Ladies and gentlemen, let's all rise and toast President Wilson. President Wilson.
President Wilson.
Mrs. Balakian, what have I done wrong now?
Mr. Davis, Garabit has been arrested and has been taken to prison.
Garabit is my right-hand man. He is essential to my work. I need him to interpret and to guide me in my job.
What job? You don't have a job. You have no official function at all. You are merely staying in the largest house in the district. In other words, you are my guest. And so you are at the mercy of your host's whims. So what has this Armenian been arrested for?
Not signing up in the army.
If he didn't, then he is in trouble. Go and speak to the chief of police.
He arrested my dragoman.
Then you are in trouble.
Can't you have a word with him?
He's the only person I'm scared of in my province, and that includes the Kurds.
I've heard that many Turks have bought their way out of the army, so I would like to offer...
Have I heard you say that men buy their way out of serving in our army?
Yes.
Thank goodness you're no longer a diplomat, Mr. Davis. You'll never get anywhere disparaging your hosts. Now, I am engaged in a diplomatic act of my own, trying to satisfy 2 wives in 1 evening. Good night, Mr. Davis.
Niçin buradasınız?
Konsolos Bey için tercüme yapıyorum.
Bir kadının benim dediklerimi tercüme etmesini istemiyorum. Sana güvenmiyorum.
What's the problem?
He doesn't want a woman interpreting for him. He doesn't trust women.
Mr. Chief of Police, you have my interpreter in your cells. Release him and you don't have to have Miss Krikorian in the room.
Ermeni tercümanınızı boş verin.
Give up on Garabit.
Now just wait a damn minute.
Efendim? Oh, tabii. Tabii. Vali Bey.
The governor's on the telephone.
Tamam. Tamam. Tabii. Baş üstüne Vali Bey. Şimdilik Ermeninizi geri alabiliyormuşsunuz.
We can have Garabit back, but just for the time being.
Thank you, Mr. Chief of Police.
Teşekkür ederim, Reis Bey.
Ermenisin. Ama pek de güzelsin. Go.
We'll wait outside for him. Good morning, sir. Well, what did he say to you?
For an Armenian, I'm quite attractive.
The chief of police is right for once.
I'll be glad when Garabet has to deal with him.
Why?
He always looks at me like a predator sizing up its prey.
Ah! Just stay still. Shushan, could you wipe the dirt near the wound? Did all the men who didn't report for duty get abused?
Only the Armenians, sir. Some of the men they were beating up were old. Too old to fight. Teachers, professors...
Well, if they're too old to join, well, why are they filling the prison with them?
It's nothing to do with the army, Mr. Davis. The Turks are using the war as a cover to kill Armenians.
Mr. Davis, Garabet is right. You must get the governor to stop this.
I've heard Garabet's version, that's all.
You don't believe me? Sir, listen to me. I heard those men being tortured. The Turks are convinced that Armenians have stored up arms and ammunition to use the war to revolt against them. I spoke to some of them. No one has any weapons. Ouch!
But the Turks and Armenians have gone through this before.
Those were terrible times, but I think this sudden violence, maybe because of direct orders from Constantinople.
Oh, you don't know that for certain.
I think the chief of police believes he's doing the job that Constantinople wants.
The chief of police was born here. His father hated Armenians, and so does his son.
It's quite probable that the governor and chief of police are taking the law into their own hands. Anything is possible out here. Shushan, answer that.
I'm afraid for those men in prison, sir. The police were erecting a fence at the rear of the prison to house more Armenians.
Hold still. I'm gonna put some stitches in it.
You know how to do this, sir.
Oh, I had to stitch up my own leg one day when I was involved in a damn fall in the Rockies. My horse fell with me, so I practiced on it first. You're gonna have quite a fetching scar on your forehead. Who was it?
Dr. Atkinson. He wanted you to know that the chief of police has rounded up 800 men. As he was saying that the prisoners were going to be deported in the morning, our telephone went dead, like the line had been cut.
Well, we know who's done that.
I don't have much time, Mr. Davis, but I've asked that someone takes care of your telephone line.
Are you going back to Constantinople?
A brief vacation in the north with my wives, Mr. Davis.
I wish to complain about the treatment of those prisoners. There must be 800 men locked up.
You cannot make official complaints.
Unofficial, then?
Why would I pay attention to an unofficial complaint? You don't have to worry about them. You see, Mr. Davis, they are being deported.
Deported where?
They will find out when they get there. Now, Mr. Davis, I'm going to vacation on the Black Sea. In my absence, Rashid Bey, the chief of police, will be in charge of the deportation, and you'd better not get in his way.
Governor...
One more thing, Consul. Both the chief of police and I want you to know that any time you venture out of the city, you are to give us your itinerary a day in advance. If you don't, then you will be treated like everyone else and will be put to death.
Come in. Come in.
My sincere apologies, sir, for waking you up this late.
Oh, it's been a restless night anyway.
One of Dr. Atkinson's nurses is at the door asking if you would go to the hospital.
Now?
Yes, sir.
It'll seem suspicious that I...